Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
There's an African proverb that says, somebody today sitting in the shade because somebody 20 years ago decided to plant a tree.
So I have a gift that I wanted to honor you with. It's a very special gift for me to you. We got 24 karat rack golden cigars.
Patrick, thanks so much for doing. Appreciate it, man. How are you guys doing? Welcome to my smart, welcome to the seven-figure squad, welcome to the seven-figure squad podcast. This is Mighty Smart Guy, Matt Cipolla here from Dallas, Texas. And we do have that video to share though, Jordan. Don't miss that video. I'm gonna cue that video in a second. But nonetheless, we're back in Dallas, Texas. That intro was a recap from the Saturday's Gotcha Book Tour in San Antonio, Texas. Brother, we drove to San Antonio, 3 weeks ago, right? 4 weeks ago?
Yeah, last week of January.
How long was the drive?
4.5 hours.
Yeah, it took me 5.5 hours to get there. Traffic was nasty to and through Austin and just getting into San Antonio. It was nasty. So before my marker was if I can get there within 3 hours, I'll drive.
Yeah.
After that, even if it's 3 hours and 30 minutes, 4 hours, I'm flying.
Yeah.
And this time around, man, it's getting busy in Texas. I mean, San Antonio's construction, Austin's construction, Dallas's construction, Houston's construction, four major cities here in Texas, just massive construction going all the way around. It tells you that a lot of population is coming to Texas, a lot of economy, a lot of families are coming to these cities, these four states in Texas. But nonetheless, we're back here. And if you wouldn't mind, I'm battling through just a light case of pneumonia. I'm coming down through it.
This man said light case of pneumonia. Light case of pneumonia.
I'm not going to let it kick my ass, bro. It's not going to be an excuse because the show must continue. So got the cleaners right here and your trusty Bob right here. Of course, I got you, Milton.
Mm-hmm.
We can rock this, bro. Mm-hmm. Rock this. So we got a unique show lined up for you this morning. So breaking news, the U.S. market shrugged off a hot inflation report from yesterday. We're going to be breaking down inflation. This thing has been kicking a lot of people's butt the last couple of years is inflation. A very annoying thing. We're going to be discussing this. Loud budgeting. That topic about loud budgeting thought in terms of something that you should share with friends, that you should get out there. Billionaires shouldn't exist. People are just upset at billionaires right now. Biden just launched his new tax. We'll probably do a breakdown video on that too as well. But Biden just launched his new tax package for the year ahead. But what taxes are going to look like, and guess who he's targeting the most? Anybody earning more than $400,000 a year, aka looking for people hiding money if you're making decamillions, and obviously the eight and nine figure money makers in our country. The content, the creators, the innovators, the generators, he is going after them hardcore. Kobe, his advice to one of his camps about the importance of starting a family, and he said this early on in his life, and a lot of different conversation here too as well. What about your health, fitness and health side of things, Milton? What type of topics you got coming up?
When it comes down to mental health and also understanding the force that drives you as a human being to be able to take that extra step forward and take that leap of faith in order to fulfill the outcome that you're trying to obtain. But also, when it comes down to Kobe's advice, I also want to tap into the characteristics that men should look into when choosing the right partner. So that way, when you do choose to acquire somebody and pursue somebody, you know exactly what to look for from the very beginning, so it can save you years of distress. And when it comes down to loud budgeting, the principles and the rules that you should follow when it comes down to loaning money to friends and family, and is it even worth loaning money to friends and family?
Yeah, exactly. Woo! Friends and family, conversation about money, it's always a very interesting conversation. So, all right, so the consumer prices climbed. Check this out, though. This happened from a day ago. Let's check out this article here. If we could look at my screen. Consumer prices climbed 3.2 in February as 2% goal remains elusive. So just keep this in mind, too, as well, is that there's a difference between inflation rate in our country and the consumer price index, commonly known as the CPI index. And so the 12-month inflation rate has been stuck between 3 and 4% since June. So as you see, the consumer price index just hovering above 3% there. But the Federal Reserve wants to get us down to 2% because everybody in the banking world, everybody in the mortgage world, everybody in the real estate world, everybody in the investor world wants these rates to come back down so they can get access to cheap money again and get more motivation for people to say, you know what, let me get in the market because now it's cheaper to borrow versus purchasing at these 6 and 7% interest rates that we currently have today. So that's where the inflation report is coming down from. Remember, last July, the consumer price index was 9%. So cost of food, the cost of electricity, the cost of gas, everything that you bought was over 9%, meaning that if your pay raise this year wasn't above 9%, you're still falling behind what it was last year because you're still digging deeper into your pocket for everything. By the way, I'm just curious. Are things still cheaper for you in your local market, whether you're from, and by the way, tell us where you're from. If you're from, you know, Miami, Florida, you're from LA, you're from New York, you're from Chicago, you're from Austin. I don't care where you are in the United States of America. Put your city and state and put down if things are still costing more or less in your city. Are things more or less? So it'd be like, I would say more in Chicago, Illinois, more in Dallas. By the way, Dallas, 5 years ago when we were 7 years ago and we were really looking at Dallas, we saw homes here for $100,000, $200,000, maybe $250,000. Like, yeah. You know, we're talking about Plano.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about Frisco. Today, house in Frisco is $450,000, $500,000. Easy. Yeah. Starter, three bedroom, two bath.
Yeah.
You were looking at homes, right?
I was looking at homes here, but no, I was actually looking at another condo for my mom back in Illinois.
Yeah.
Because she's not budging, man. She's like, look, I love you, but I don't have anything in Dallas for me besides you, and you're always working. So I need to stay here with the family. So I'm like, all right, mom, not a problem.
So it's not recruiting your mom, it's recruiting the family.
Yeah, exactly. Got it. I got to figure that out. I got to make more money for that one. But I was looking at a condo, actually, on South Shore. Mm-hmm. When a couple years ago, when I was looking at it, it was really nice. I mean, it's still upcoming. Uh-huh. But now, when I first saw it, it was about $72,000. And I was like, yo, I should really take advantage of this. This is pre-COVID. This is when I was working at UFC gym, and I was barely making like $40,000 a year. Yeah. So even though it was a good price, during that time, I couldn't afford it at the status that I was. I go back and I'm just shopping online, looking at it, and I came across the same condo because I Zillowed it. Yeah. I'm not sure how accurate it is, but that same condo that was $72,000 in South Shore right now is $243,000.
Wow.
4 years later.
Wow.
4 years later, man. And here, same thing. When you first moved here, you're like, dude, the housing market's cheap. You gotta enjoy it. You gotta make good decisions, X, Y, Z. And when I started looking a couple months ago, I'm like, what the hell is this guy talking about? These houses are $150,000. These houses are $400,000, $450,000.
That was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But when we first moved out here, we couldn't get anything in 21. Yeah. Remember when we first moved down here? Yeah. We couldn't find nothing.
I remember that.
And it was a residential prep. There was like multiple offers.
Yeah.
10, 20, 30 offers on one house.
Yeah.
I mean, people had applications in, people had pre-approvals letter in, and they were just, okay. And they go back to the loaners. Can I put $20,000 more in the offer? Can I put $50,000 more in the offer?
Wow.
Can I put, you know, so they're buying homes at a premium. But yeah, I mean, for sure. 4, 5, 7 years ago, whole lot like this. But yet, continue.
Yeah, so like where my mind goes, for the people who don't understand the inflation rate, people don't understand how the economy works, whether it's in their favor or against them, whether you're a 9-to-5 or you're a person who is in business for themselves, whether you're a glorified self-employee or actually have a successful business. You've been in the money game for quite some time. And these are a couple of things that, there are a couple of things that people are curious about on how to approach their finances.
Yep.
So they're like, dude, can you ask the money guy? Like, what are some decent steps? So I wrote a question down for you. And this is amongst the people who are listening right now. What are some simple steps to take now to protect our savings, their savings from the inflation that's currently happening in our economy.
Yeah. So I built my career also during the high inflationary time too as well, because the interest rates are high in late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
So that's when I really started my career. And so rates dropped in the mid 2000s. So usually in an economy, my last 25 years of just doing business and being in financial services world, anytime the country is going through something, they've learned to drop the interest rates to stir spending, to create a lot of excitement, to drive prices up, to drive whatever, the economic, you know, mobility of things, just to get money transacting. That's what currency is all about. Currency is like electric currency.
Sure.
You want money flowing, right? Like streams flowing. You want money flowing. You just want it stuck. Wise people know how to harvest, though. Wise people know how to store cash, store resources. And foolishness causes you just to spend it. But when you are putting yourself in position of digging down deeper, because once the interest rates start rising, guess what they're trying to get you to do? They're trying to get you to stop spending.
Mm.
And that's what's going on right now. People stopped buying homes. People are hesitating a lot more now about spending things and like, hesitating more about charging things. But if they were caught up in a lifestyle, instead of them stopping their spending, they're just creating more credit card debt.
Yeah.
And then what's worse about that is the credit card debt interest rates. Guess what happens when the interest rates rise? So do those credit cards interest rates rise. So instead of being at 17% interest rate, now it's at a 20% interest rate. Now it's at a 24% interest rate because a bank is not in the business of giving you more money in the forms of CDs and high yield savings accounts than they are in charging you those interest rates. So, excuse me.
So it's one of the things that I noticed now that I've been looking into buying this property in Illinois. Yeah. I remember 4 years ago when I was trying to look for a property and things were doing okay. Five, 6 years ago, things were doing okay. The sense of urgency that a lot of the loan officers had was very minimal. They would return my message in about 5-6 hours, the next day in about 2-3 days. Yeah. They'd get back to me, I'll send you a link.
Yeah.
Now,
they
responded to me within minutes. Emailing me within minutes. You know, Mr. Alvarez, what if we just jump on a Zoom call? It'd be so much easier to process it. I'll send you the link right now so you can apply for this loan.
Yeah. A lot of lazy realtors and loan officers were birthed during low interest rates.
Yeah.
They didn't learn how to market. They just knew how to take orders.
Yeah.
And then the real loan officers, the ones that really wanted to build their business like a business, that cares about their brand, guess what? They doubled down and it took over the market share of those that didn't want to improve. Yeah. So, you know, it's a sad thing, but yeah, you're going to find a lot more responsive, which is a great time for you to sit down with the loan officer, a great time for you to sit down with the realtor, because they might have more time to actually show you the neighborhoods that you want to look, whereas before there's none of that going around, which for a lot of realtors, they're also looking for different ways to get paid. Meaning that if this whole National Association of Realtors lawsuit kicks in, for example, in California, there's a case study where this brokerage firm find a listed property where if you're a broker and you're going to sell it, you know, you bring your client to the deal, if the broker doesn't get a commission, but they charge a $10,000 fee, right?
Yeah.
And the seller and the buyer have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
So now they're being more, I don't know, either transparent.
Yeah.
Or they're just saying, listen, this is the flat fee I'm working with.
Well, that gives them a guarantee that they get paid, right?
If they sell the house.
If they sell the house.
If they don't sell the house.
Yeah.
Remember, there's no guarantee. Like, if the buyer still doesn't get an approval letter or changes his mind, the deal doesn't go through.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a downside. That's the downside of that. But inflation is still a very near important thing in this day and age. Can we go back to my slide here real quick again? Here's a change. If you look at this graph right here, consumer price index changed from 1 year earlier. So this is where we were. Remember, we were at 9.1%, and then we're down here now to the hard blue line, all the way to right. That as of March 12, 2024, Bureau of Labor Statistics here. So we're a lot better than we were before. So this is what, so from 2020. So those are, it's a voting year, right? So this is the argument that a lot of people are saying, hey, we have this is called the Bidenflation, the Bidenomics. This is what this current president has brought to our economy. It's still way above where it was in a previous presidency. Now, I'm not trying to tell you to vote one way or the other, but if you're doing research, and you're voting in areas of priority. For me, the number one policy that I'm looking for any politician to be strong on and have a strong platform on is economic policy. Local politician, state politician, federal politician. This is the things I'm looking for to make sure, because if a man or a woman has the economic capacity to be a provider, that government stays out their way or creates opportunities, then they can provide for their own family with less dependency on government. Because you have less dependency on government, you're more independent. You're free. You're not bound by constraints and overregulation. And so a lot of businesses have been stuck with overregulation, and that's why they've not been able to grow and thrive. So speaking of opportunities, to answer your question, so the opportunities of tough times, it's a beautiful thing because it creates a lot of innovation. So one of the first things I did when inflation was tough is I said, well, why not start a side business? Why not start a side hustle? So if you haven't started a side hustle, I don't know why more people aren't starting side hustles. You're almost forced to. You know what people are doing? They're just getting second and third jobs.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be trading time for money, which you are doing with a job, second job, why don't you trade time for creating value? For who? Yourself. Because who are you creating value for and getting a second job? The boss. So if you find a side hustle, you have a talent, you have a skill, you have an ability that you have not learned yet to monetize or create a marketplace for, and I promise you, you got it. Because if you start a side business, one of my best recommendation to tax books is save your taxes big time. Remember when we interviewed Sandy Botkin in a conference a couple years ago?
Yes.
You used to work for the IRS and is a CPA out there in Florida, Jewish man in Florida. But he would share with me in first chapter, why you be brain dead not to start a side hustle. So I share this in my seminars. So for example, you got a cell phone?
Yeah.
Got a car?
Yes.
Wi-Fi at the house?
Yes.
Once in a while, you like to eat food?
Yes.
So if you were just working for UFC when I found you, mm-hmm. and that's all you did, mm-hmm. no side hustle, no moonlighting, no security guard, or if you're working as a bouncer, you're not an independent bouncer, but you're working for the restaurant, mm-hmm. they pay you as an employee, mm-hmm. you have zero capacity to write those off in your taxes. Mm-hmm. But even if you work as an independent side bouncer, or you do personal training on the side, outside of your normal job.
Yeah.
You get your own side hustle, you get your own camp. I remember the P90X guys used to have a little camp on Sundays at Venice Beach where they started the P90X type movement.
I recall.
Right? And that's when they started their network marketing company, mm-hmm. Selling P90X workouts. They started it from creating a community around their passion, their skill set, their ability, their gift. And God's giving you a gift. And oftentimes things that the only person that's going to monetize your gift is your boss. No, God wants to have you monetize your gift and create more value from your gift. And so if you do start a side hustle, guess what? Those four things I just mentioned in Milton, house, you could potentially be if you have a certain square footage for you in your apartment or your house, but cell phone, Wi-Fi at the house, food, car, these are now tax deductible expenses, which in the meantime, it lowers your withholdings, right? Some people say married in zero on your taxes or married in two. You can actually increase it. You can increase it to married in six or married. Well, Matt, I don't have six kids. That's got nothing to do with how many dependents you have. That's all HR says sometimes as a rule. Attach it to the amount of dependents you have. But if you look at the actual withholding chart, your W-9s, it's got nothing to do with the dependents you have. You can have married in 15. You're married 22. And by the way, don't take my word for it. We're going to put in the description of this episode the link to the IRS's withholding calculator so you can get it straight from the IRS's website. Again, it's got nothing to do with the amount of dependents you have. You can claim married in 20. So what happens? Less of your income now goes to your income taxes. They take less out of your paycheck. So it goes back into now your take-home cash. And guess what you can do with that take-home cash? Pay for the increased cost of goods and services you're dealing with, but you're creating value on the side by starting a side hustle. Bam. That'd be it.
If you guys are watching this, whoever asked that question, hope you got your answer. That was a good answer.
So my announcement here, these things here had snowballed this for me for years and years and years and years. So maybe you don't realize my day job is running a life insurance organization. I got over 6,000 agents across the country spanning over 34 offices. I'll be in Memphis, Tennessee with one of our offices there in Memphis this Saturday for the Gotcha Book Tour. So if you're out in Memphis, Tennessee this Saturday, I'll be out there doing the Gotcha Book Tour. Come on down. It's 10 o'clock. We're going to do the Gotcha Book Tour at our Memphis office. If you're interested, in the comment section, put Memphis, and we'll send you info, address of where to connect with me. My side hustle is now turned into a grown business, and now it's actually a grown business because now we've created a new strategic partnership in my career. Let's take a look at this video here from Brian Adams of Integrity Marketing Group, downtown Dallas.
It's rare to find leaders as strong and inspiring as Matt and Sheena Cipolla.
Matt and I are not only husband and wife, but we're partners in business, and it's been an incredible experience building our agency together.
I mean, we were good before, but now there's a new horizon. We're excited that the Mighty Smart Movement is partnering with Integrity.
Partnering with Integrity connects us to the needed resources so our leaders are empowered to do what they do best, which is build the next generation of leaders.
I couldn't be more excited to welcome Matt and Sheena Cipolla to the Integrity family.
There you go. That's exciting time. So you probably wonder what this is all about, right?
Yeah, no idea.
You have no idea? Okay. So this is the equivalent of basically being in a position of where Patrick was 2 years ago. That deal.
That's sick, man.
That deal.
Is it with the same...
same company.
With the same desired outcome that he has? With this being his...
Different. Okay. Different. See, Patrick went out.
Yeah.
I'm staying in.
Okay.
I'm rolling it up. You know, so Patrick has an exit. So Patrick exited. So Patrick sold his company for $300 million and is now moving on here. He has a two-year exit. And every month, his responsibilities are starting to decline. Patrick doesn't do update videos anymore. There's a lot of things he does. He doesn't do Dream Team Call anymore, which we were on every week for the last 8 years. He doesn't do that anymore. So there's a lot of things on a day-to-day operation. He's doing less and less and less and less every month. So now Patrick is officially, by this summer, he'll be officially 100% Valuetainment. So he's leaving it to guys like myself to help play a key role at PHP Agency. And one of the key roles playing at PHP Agency is building my own business upon this platform. And my insurance business, for those of you guys that didn't know, it's called the Money Smart Movement, my insurance organization. It's called the Money Smart Movement. And so we have the same partnership, but different arrangement, because different partnerships create different outcomes and different time. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still running my life insurance business, and I'm stepping out. But it's the same amount of magnitude in terms of being partnered with a multi-billion dollar company. They have $1 billion EBITDA. They have a deep paycheck. I mean, they got deep pockets, man.
Yeah.
And so they offer something very handy. They surprised us in our event last July. But anyway, make a long story short, on paper right now, our net worth went up a whole bunch. It's crazy to think that this whole $500 investment to get an insurance license has now caused us to be deca millionaires. And this is what it's about, man. And financial security for my wife, financial security for my kids. When we start talking about generational wealth, it's not generation wealth. Good enough for you and your wife, and hopefully your kids and your kids can deal with it. And and I'm excited to know that the impact that we're making is going to affect my grandkids. And I had opportunity to hold her back in October, but she's going to be set. My great grandkids, if I take it in the next 5 years to the next level where I expect it to be, it's going to take care of our great grandkids. So this whole picture, this whole vision I have of my picture being all my kids' homes that take take money from the family trust fund, it's going to be real.
Yeah.
If you ever stayed at a Hilton hotel, and every Hilton hotel's got the picture of the Hilton, the Hilton brothers, how they started it, right? Well, guess what? Every home of the Cipolla lineage that takes money from the family trust, guess what we'll have in it? A picture of my wife and I.
Beautiful, man.
Right, because we're building home, and it's going to be a reminder to them that if they decide to make a decision, their generation, they could do something special for their next generation too.
But now it's a different level of responsibility when it comes down to protecting your back.
It is,
using,
of course,
using your
asset
discernment,
production,
because all of a sudden you're going to start having a lot of people gravitate towards you.
Oh yeah,
wanting to be in your circle. people who didn't believe in you 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago coming back and knocking on your door, man.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. So here's a point I want you guys to consider. You know, you could do one of two things. You can either start your own business flat out by yourself, which is what I did, or, right, and I think sometimes when we're talking about entrepreneurship and starting your own side gig, is people don't work for a boss long enough to have perspective. For example, how long were you a trainer before you decided to start your own deal?
8 years.
Yeah. So he knew what it's like to be in the what do you call that? The box system.
In the trenches.
In the trenches, yeah. of the fitness industry.
Of
corporation, yeah. And fitness industry.
Yeah.
To see how the industry works. Sometimes when I deal with 18, 19, 20-year-olds or even 25-year-olds that never knew how to be good employees,
yeah.
Because you think if you suck as an employee, guess what? You're always gonna suck as an entrepreneur. You think you need more or less. Of course, I asked a lot of people, you think you need more or less discipline being your own boss? Man, less boss. Man, I'm my own boss. That's exactly why you suck as an entrepreneur. Because yeah. You actually need 100 times more, 1,000 times more discipline and self-awareness to run your own business. And it is not for the faint of heart or, worse, the lazy at heart. So 8 years, and you got to learn the industry. So you got to figure out for 8 years what you don't want, right?
What I don't want to do. What cycles and patterns I don't need to follow.
Right. And yeah. You also figured out how you can improve what clients are really looking for.
100%.
Were you finding out ways to improve where you were at the companies you were a personal trainer at, and you suggested ideas to your manager, and the manager couldn't do it because he was also tired. They couldn't be as creative as they wanted to be?
100%. It was a combination of lack of creativity, being restricted by the big corporation. And also, there was two locations where I can't mention the company name, but sure. Two locations where I brought forth ideas on how to improve, how to scale, how to grow, how to innovate. And there was some form of a resentment, but fear of potentially taking their job.
Yeah, because you intimidated the boss because the boss, and he didn't want to give you credit.
Correct.
By the way, weak leaders are the ones that don't know how to give credit. People always want to take, I met this person by myself, or I got this opportunity by myself. I got myself a job. No, a friend hooked you up. Somebody made an introduction. Somebody got you some buy-in, if that's the case. And so the strongest of leaders always know how and when to give the right shout-outs, to give the right credit, because that is a form of honor. And when you have a lifelong bit of honoring those who have helped you, guess what happens? More people want to help you. Those doors keep flooding, all right? And so there's a difference here. For example, here's some ideas of strategic partnerships, okay? So when I'm thinking about strategic partnerships, keep these ideas or companies in mind. So for example, Uber and Spotify, right? Starbucks and Target, Disney and Chevrolet, Apple Pay and MasterCard. What about the credit card we talk about, the American Express?
Yeah.
How many different members or alliances are within that one credit card? If you buy your things through American Express, right, and you use them as a charge card, you charge up points, then you get access to their partners or their hotels and airlines.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what their airlines and hotels, guess what the travel industry has done to a credit card? They've partnered with a bank. So they got involved in transactions. So the bank has a product they want to sell, which is money and finance and financing travel. And what do the travel industry want? More customers.
Of course.
So you bring the two together. So which means that as you start your entrepreneurial journey, you have a couple choices to make. As you find yourself working for somebody and you are doing well as your best you can as an employee, okay? Learn the business on somebody else's dime. You learned the business on somebody else's dime for 8 years.
Yeah.
That was worth a master's degree.
Yeah.
Right? Eight years, that's a PhD of what not to do in the fitness world.
Yeah, and you got people who are graduating with their associates in exercise science or getting their certifications expecting to do the same exact thing I'm doing in within a year, within 6 months, man. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, so when you are finding yourself in that predicament, great. Learn. The next move now is start a side hustle. Create that side hustle. And that side hustle can be completely independent, or you can find somebody that has started a side hustle too as well and ask to work with them from a strategic partnership standpoint. So if you find somebody, for me, when I got involved in the insurance business, I tried doing it on my own. The first month, I tried mentorship. And then guess what I found out with my mentor? I got capped. I exceeded my mentor. I'm like, okay, yeah, what else do you need to teach me? Because I'm about to make the same amount of money you are. Okay? Couldn't take me to the next level. Guess what I did? I went independent for 12 years. And after I went independent for 12 years, guess what? I found myself stuck. And guess who my next mentor at that time was? Boom. Patrick Bet David enters the picture. And guess where he took me? Boom, boom, boom. And guess what has led me now? So finding the right mentors at all phases of your life, whether it be solopreneur. And here's the thing. Some people may opt to be solo. Some guy asked me, who was this? He asked me in the music industry. Fat Joe says, a lot of guys got it screwed up. They want to stay focused on doing this one thing by themselves. They want to have 100% ownership of a $5 million company, 100% ownership of a $10 million company versus creating compilations and partnerships and groups and resources going to be combined together. And now you have 10% of a $1 billion company, which is bigger.
Yeah.
So you have to find out, and then how much more fun do you have with other partners? I could tell you this. I could have started my own company. I could have had my own Money Smart Movement without a partnership with Integrity Market Group. I could tell you this. I wouldn't have as much fun. I wouldn't have as much fun building it. I would have had a lot of stress. I would have had a lot of budgetary issues. Because one thing to run a financial services business, so I want to have the operational expenses for compliance or new business department, for HR, for things that right now I don't have to worry. Why? Because the strategic partner takes those headaches away from me and I can grow as an organization and leverage their resources. So you can find a strategic partner in your side hustle. It doesn't have to be complete 100% on your own. You know, a lot of guys came to me through social media advertising. Hey, man, let me go get you some leads. And so I bought the Tai Lopez course, how to build your own social media agency. A bunch of young guys all came at me. I asked them one question. How many clients do you have? Who have you done this for? Mm. Nobody. You're my first. And you, okay, what do you want to charge me? $5,000 a month. Who told you to charge me $5,000 a month? You need to be paying me $5,000 a month. You haven't proven you can do this yet. You're reading off a course. And a dozen of young, hungry, aggressive entrepreneurs came out and said, listen, you work for me. You try this for 90 days. Do it for me for free. Show me that can be done, and then I'll pay you $5,000. Guess how many took me up on that offer?
Zero.
Zero.
Zero. Because they need money.
They need money, yeah. And they got this course from some guru,
yeah.
And he strung them all out. And sadly, these guys bought the course for, I don't know, $1,000, $1,500. I don't know what the course is. I think it was around that much. But that's why you got to also watch out. That's why a lot of people don't like these online gurus, because these online gurus don't necessarily make money selling what it is that they're trying to get you to do. They just make money by selling you the course to hopefully get that result that they're talking about. They've never done it themselves.
Yeah.
So if I'm out there to sell an insurance course and I had to make $100,000 in business, I can show you how to do it, because I've shown multiple people, dozens of people, hundreds of people how to make $100,000 a year. I got you on that course. So I have no problem. I would have no problem with what do you call that? With a straight look in the eye, a solid back, a feeling of I'll do my part, but you got to do your part. It's only fear in your part is holding you back. So these are things that you have to consider with doing a strategic alliance or solely going out for yourself. Because a lot of times people go off on their own too fast, and what happens is when you go off too strong too fast, You end up making a lot of mistakes. You end up spending a lot of money. You end up spending a lot of unnecessary time, a lot of unnecessary fatigue that being completely independent does to you. But when you create a strategic partnership, man, for the rest of my career, I'm constantly be looking for strategic partnerships, because I'm not the one always having to do all the heavy lifting. We're all in it together, but create the right strategic partnerships, people that are heading in the right direction. Obviously, you have the right legalities, knowing what you're getting into to begin with, can be the difference of you staying in a financial circle or financially breaking free. All right. Loud budgeting. Let's talk about what is loud budgeting. This next topic here. This is a trend now that's socially acceptable. And I cringe like this because it's socially acceptable. Let me know if you think this is socially acceptable or why it should be called socially acceptable. Let's take a look at the clip.
See it.
So there's a current trend going on called loud budgeting. Loud budgeting is essentially where it is now socially acceptable for you to talk about your financial goals with your friends and use them as an excuse to get out of social obligations, out of things that are gonna cost money. So suddenly—
transparency.
Yes.
And vulnerability.
Yes.
Will lead to less discomfort in the long term, maybe a little bit on the upfront.
Correct.
Which will allow you to not have to keep up with the Joneses and have the stigma, which will allow you to budget better.
Exactly.
Okay. Why is that a trend? You know what I call that? Clear communication.
It's not responsible.
Yeah. That's clear communication to me. Well, that's not a trend. See, this is the problem too. Again, back to the phones. Here's the danger with phones. We make a lot of money with our phones. We're connecting with people, but not connected with people. Meaning that if I go out with friends, that's the first thing that comes up. So there's no awkwardness. And if you feel awkward bringing this up, guess what? You're probably hanging around the wrong friends. And the friends you're calling to go out and hang out with, wrong. Or you're looking to mooch off somebody. You're the wrong friend. One of those two things. But you know, I just kind of found it initially awkward just to hear that saying it's not like a new trend. No, that's called clear communicating adult behavior.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of people lack that maturity. And the fact that they lack the maturity, I feel a lot of people are trying to keep up with other people's spendings.
Yeah.
Trying to keep up so they wait, they can belong, be liked, be accepted. And it leads you into people pleasing. And bro, people pleasing from what, because I used to do that a lot when I was in my early 20s. I was broke as shit. I had my friends who were making okay money and I was making no money.
Yeah.
And hey, you want to go here? Yes. Hey, you want to go here? Yes. Hey, you want to go here? Sure. Hey. And I had maybe like $40 in my name. And it left me broke. It left me without boundaries. And it rattled like who I was. Almost like my identity was attached to, am I able to provide? Am I able to, you know, give when it was asked? So now, one of the biggest things that I struggle with, I'm not sure if this is something that you struggled with, but when you go out with friends, at least now, right? And whether it's your invite or their invite, you know, my thing is if I invite, I'm paying. But now as a group or with just one or two people that are with you, you get that itch. Like, for example, if I go to Chipotle with, you know, one or two of my friends and mm-hmm. I order first, am I obligated to pay for the second and third person right behind me because they're my friends? Am I obligated? Because then you're paying... And you sit there, and you're like, and you sit there.
But you invited him.
No, we all like, hey, hungry? Food? Anybody? Right? Or it wasn't even my idea sometimes. So at that moment, I go first, or a lot of times they kind of shove me to go first because mm-hmm. they know for some reason that moral obligation in my head, like, all right, I'm first in line, and they're right behind me. Do you or do you not pay for them?
Yeah.
Is that, as you grew in your finances, is that a struggle that you had? That you felt obligated, morally obligated to pay for people since you were in a better position.
I feel now because people expect me to pay for them. But when I was coming up, I had zero qualms that if I'm in a line, that's why I liked going to like a Chipotle.
Yeah.
Because you get to stand in line.
Yeah.
And then they're running the car, blah, blah, blah. But I'm out.
Yeah.
And as they bring up their order, like, are you, now they gotta ask me.
Yeah.
Right? That's why. So I never went to go dine at restaurants. I went to go dine at these fast casual spots. Mm. You know? Jason's Deli, because Jason's Deli is right across our office from there. Or I go to cheap taco spots where, what, you know, one another three, four tacos? It's a buck?
Yeah.
$2?
Maybe 10 years ago.
Street taco.
Yeah.
Taco spot. You know? So, you know, these little taquerias and Zacatacos in Chicago. Yep.
So there's this picture. I'm not sure if you can pull it up on your screen. I want to pull up on the screen and we can read it out loud together. I have a little re-long. And you tell me in this position, if you were in this position.
Well, you send me a link?
It's in the notes.
Got it.
In the PDF. It's titled, What Would You Do? The Principles of Loaning Money to Friends and Family. So okay. It's not a video. It's a picture that pops up on Instagram.
Oh, right.
And it shares a story on what would you specifically do in a specific case scenario. And I'll read it out for you.
All right, one second. Okay, here we go. All right. Let's take a look.
All right, look it up.
It's up on my Insta on the computer yet. All right.
Do you want to...
All right, so...
There it is.
Okay, gotcha.
So, do you want to read it?
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. All right, follow along with my proviso West reading skills. Here we go. So you learned, there you go. We started already off on the bad note. You loaned $3,000 to your friend last year. And since then, she or he has refused to pay back, which has really deteriorated your friendship. You asked her to just pay $1,000 and forget the rest because you are in a financial crisis. Your friend then says she can only get you $500 since that's all he or she has. You felt like you had no option but to accept, so eventually gave her your account details and send the amount directly to your bank account. You woke up the next morning, checked your account, and you had $5,000 in it. You kept staring at the screen in disbelief, but it was indeed $5,000. You grabbed your phone and found 73 missed calls from your friend, an additional 37 messages begging you to transfer back $4,500 since she only meant to send you $500 and mistakenly added an extra zero. So what would you do? Would you send back the $4,500? Would you take back your full $3,000? Or would you just keep the entire thing? What would Matt Apollo do?
This is what happens this day and age world of Zelle and Cash App and all that. This when I was in the business of loaning money to friends,
yeah,
you know, it was cash.
Yeah.
Or I wrote them a check.
Yes.
It wasn't I accidentally Zelled you or accidentally.
Has it happened to you though?
Never. By the way, Jordan, would you mind getting another glass of water? Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. All right. So
two situations. Matt 30 years ago, uh-huh, coming out of the Marine Corps. Matt today.
If I was back 30 years ago and digital money, digital wallets, and digital transfer of money was that as readily easy as it is today, I'd ask you this question. You accidentally sent me before I'm going to send it back, right? So no more, I'm sending it back.
Yeah.
But before I send it back, now the question is how much?
Yeah.
Thank you. Because before I send it back, I appreciate it, Bo. Thank you, man. I'd ask, okay, you got $5,000.
Yeah.
So how the heck you have $5,000 and you accidentally transfer it to somebody? Who are you transferring it to? Who exactly are you transferring it to?
Yeah.
So, and I'd find out whoever that was, because why? Anytime you loan money to somebody, you have the moral obligation to ask a little bit more about their finance because now it's personal.
Yeah.
Right? When you fill out a bank application, don't they ask you about your personal information?
Yes.
Well, how come I'm not doing that as a friend to peer, loaning money?
Yeah.
So I'm prioritizing, okay, because I need to find out other enemies that I might have, that we may have joint friends with, that I need to be aware of as well. They say, okay, let's say, for example, go to someone, another friend. Why, did you also lend them money? I'd find out what the arrangement was. Either way, I'm sending something back, and here's what I do. I'd probably send back half. I'd send back half, which is $2,500.
Yeah.
And calling, I'm sorry, the loan is $3,000 or $5,000?
The loan is $3,000, but they accidentally sent you $5,000, trying to only send you $500, which was the original what they had.
So I'd send them everything back but $1,500. Here's what I would do.
Okay.
Send everything but $1,500. So what, $3,500?
Okay.
I'd send them back $3,500. I'd say, I tell you what, I'd take the $1,500. Half what they owed me. And I'm calling it a day. You don't owe me anything anymore. You don't owe anything anymore. It's causing me enough emotional strain. And you're now because here's the thing. I don't have to return you shit.
Yeah.
Let's get this straight, friend. I don't have to. That's $2,000 more than you're supposed to send me. I could say, I could make up some interest that you owe me between when you borrowed and when you hadn't paid me.
Yeah.
That you owe me out $5,000. Yeah. But I don't have to pay you nothing.
Yeah.
You made a mistake. That's not my problem now. It's in my account. Now it's my money. You can argue with the bank all that. Well, you did the confirmation, blah, 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 and it's privacy, security. It's very hard to renege.
Yeah.
Instant cash. So I'm not a big fan of it. But I'm sending them back $3,500 bucks.
Same. I'd probably be petty and probably not send anything back. But made like $1,000 or what they were trying to give me, which is $500. So with that, guys, like, you know, I've done this these last couple of years, since 2019, where friends and family have said, hey, man, you know, I'm currently going through a minor struggle, a minor setback. And, you know, could you loan me X amount for my car note? Hey, could you loan me X amount for my mortgage? Or could you, hey, could you loan me X amount for my phone bill? Could you loan me X amount for whatever, credit card bills, whatever the case may be. And these are the three rules I followed. And rule number two, I got it off of Matt, but I added a little bit more percentage to it. So the three rules is don't give what you can't afford. Rule number two, only give, Matt said, you said 10%. I said 50%. Only give 50% of what is asked, depending on how much you like the person. And never, ever, 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 ever expect that money back. Because I go on Instagram, I go on Facebook, look at their stories, go, you know, I use Snapchat to keep up with my, you know, my, mm-hmm. my nieces and my mm-hmm. my family, my cousins. And
life is great, huh?
Life is amazing for them. You know, they're at Gucci, they're at Louis Vuitton.
Oh my gosh.
They're at five-star restaurants.
Walt Disney World.
They have a table at a club.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, yo.
But they sell you money.
This person only, you know, in a small amount, too. It's not a big amount. It's like, I let you borrow $500 or I let you borrow $200. I let you borrow whatever. It's a small amount.
Yeah.
That bottle costs well over $1,000. Yeah. That Louis Vuitton bill costs well over, what, $800, $900, $1,000?
Yeah.
You know, where's my money, bro? For like the last 2-3 years, where's my money?
Yeah.
You know, and now I was like, all right, whatever, man. It took $300 to be able to filter out a person that doesn't belong in my life, obviously, that I can't trust
with
my money.
When you don't pay back people, it's like saying, you're my friend, you're my family member, you owe me.
Yeah.
Without actually verbalizing that to begin with.
How do you say? And then you approach them, like, hey, bro, like, you know, because I had this conversation 2 times, you know, friends and family.
Yeah.
Where, like, hey, look, it's been, you said 4 days, it's been about a week and a half. I'm not asking for the money back. But I'm just, I want to call you out on your word because you're a man.
Mm-hmm.
And as a man, I feel like we should be able to communicate with each other on where you stand with this.
Yep.
And I'm reiterating, I do not want the money back. Yep. Keep it. I don't know what your financial issue is, but keep it. But I'm letting you know next time you do that, it's going to go really, really bad for you, especially if you're doing it in the outside world and it's not a family member or a friend loaning you the money. As a man, you should be able to keep your word and fulfill exactly what you say you're going to do. For example, I don't mind sharing my financial things right now. 4 days ago, Square, Cash App, Venmo, and those three platforms where I get paid, and Stripe. For some reason, I was getting a nice lump of cash this month because I made a little bit more sales, I scaled a little bit, so it was a big lump of cash. And all of a sudden, all platforms held my money completely, and I'm like, I got bills to pay, man. So it was it was roughly maybe around, you know, depends on who's watching, right? But it was roughly maybe around 50, 60K.
Yeah.
And split up in those platforms that was just being held.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? That's why I don't like that shit. So I need to figure out a better way.
Well, as soon as you get them, you got to get to your bank account.
Yeah.
Because they can't match your bank account.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. So now I'm like, crap. I reached out to one of my buddies back in Illinois. I'm like, hey, bro, it's going to sound really, really weird, but you know I'm good for it. Can you give me a 12-hour, $1,000 loan? 12 hours. Or no, I said 24 hours. He's like, yeah, no problem, because I built rapport with them.
Mm-hmm.
Zelled me to $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Literally within 9 hours,
sent
it right back with a little bit of interest. Right back within 9 hours.
Love
so
it.
I shortened the period of time so that way I can build that rapport.
Yeah.
So keep your word. If you're gonna take money, loan money, whatever the case may be able to keep your word so that way you build that rapport over time and people can actually trust you with their money.
Love it.
Yeah.
Do you have a business line of credit with Amex yet or your bank?
Yep.
Business line of credit? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time, use that instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Good. As a suggestion.
Yeah.
Here, speaking of friends.
Yeah.
Right. Kobe has got a clip that resurfaced here of his vice at his camp. They told all to the attendees, the campers, about starting a family and settling down, and don't do knucklehead stuff. And it's interesting to see the faces on these young players when Kobe is telling them to settle down and start a family. Let's take a look at this clip.
I went to ABCD camp. And he came and talked to all the kids that was there, and I was just listening. I was just trying to soak everything up I could.
You sit down, because I'm tired as hell.
Going to clubs, doing all this stuff. You know, although it might sound fun to you guys now, man, that's not the important thing, man. The important thing is finding a woman that you can spend the rest of your life with, man, and setting up a family. And that makes me happy, man. Some guys might be different, but that makes me happy. That's not soft. I will wear your ass out. Don't get it twisted.
Come on, come here and play hard. It really doesn't matter if I'm the best player in the camp, you know?
Come on, James.
LeBron James is simply the greatest 15, 16-year-old kid I've ever seen in my life.
15, 16-year-old LeBron. And he planted that seed in LeBron.
Yeah.
And look at the families that these two basketball players have built. Some of the greatest basketball players in anybody's top five, top 10 list, starting five list, you've got either Kobe or LeBron in them. Why? Because the right woman in their life grounded him. Now, you know, don't look over, I'm not looking over Kobe's, sidestep, which he greatly paid for. Now, the standard is now everybody walking on water. You know, we're a process of always being perfected. LeBron, he's been married to the same woman. His kids, all rock star basketball players. His oldest son, Brian, looking to get drafted into the NBA. and his second son is taller than him.
Yeah.
So put your thoughts on what Kobe here is saying to a group of young, high testosterone, athletic. You know, they all spruce up at the court when the girl shows up.
Yeah.
When the girls show up, they're like, oh, show up and showing out. What do you think about that?
15 to 18-year-old me would probably be like, this motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, stop. Stop. I have a lot to experience. I have a lot to show for. If I know I have a promising future in any kind of sport, I know what's going to come at me. My testosterone would be speaking very loud for me. Fast forward to now, where I'm at and what I want and what I desire. And, you know, I wish I would have been a lot more attentive to these principles in my late teens and my early 20s. But, you know, I didn't learn from it, bro. I was around the wrong people at all times. But I feel with that, it having the right woman by your side brings you a sense of security. And I think when you have a greater sense of security, that allows you and frees you up to have more attention and more focus on what you're trying to build.
Yep.
Because when you're jumping around from woman to woman, it's always going to be something in the back of your head on, you know, fuck, what's next? This is an empty feeling. It's, mm-hmm. it's very emotionally and it's draining. It drains your energy. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense.
Yep.
Laying with multiple women. I know a lot of the young guys who are probably watching this are like, bro, that's bullshit. No, I lived it. I experienced it. It's extremely draining. Because at the end of the night, you get a pump, you release, then what?
Yeah.
Then what? What happens then?
Yep.
At least, you know, now that I see married men, it's like, bro, I love having sex with my wife. Matt's one of the biggest guys. He, you know, whenever he has a great night with his wife, respectfully to his wife, he's on top of his game at the gym. He's happy. He's smiling. He's like, bro, but, you know, it's the sex is great, but you know what gives it, you know, what makes it even better? When we're done, I lay next to her, and I know my heart is secure with the woman that's laying on my chest. Exactly, like just like that, right? But I want to say something, though. I do want to say that a lot of people are scared to make the decision. A lot of people are saying, a lot of men are saying, I'm waiting for God to choose for me. And I don't believe, maybe you do, but I don't believe that God picks your partner.
A lot of women say that too.
Yeah. I don't believe God picks your partner. So here you have women past the age of 35, past their prime,
yes.
You know, upset, not knowing, you know, what's next for me? I'm trying to have a family. You have men in their 40s trying to be in their 20s, being Casanovas because they're too scared.
Yep.
They're scared and they're waiting for this omnipresent, you know, sign and the voice from the clouds say that is your woman. And I don't believe that's what it is. I believe that, you know, there are certain principles that you have to look at, certain guidelines that you should follow in order to know who to pick. And actually, do you know who Miles Monroe is?
Well, of course.
There's a video.
Bahamas.
Yeah, bro. There's a video, if we can pull it up, Jordan, that he speaks about that.
A plane crash, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Here we go. A wife. God never told Adam he would make him a wife. He said, I'd make him a helper suitable for him. Not a wife, just a helper. Someone to help him carry out his dominion responsibility. The word there is present. Present in Hebrew means to parade before, which means that God will never choose your mate. He'll just parade people in front of you. You got to make the choice. Uh-oh. Now, we've been taught by many people, well, the Lord chose my spouse. The Lord. Now, listen, you think the Lord is that stupid? If God chose your mate, then you could blame him for everything that's wrong in your marriage. Mm. No, it says God presented her to the man. He paraded her in front of him. And that's why God never touches the choice. You choose who you want to marry. Your mom says you make your bed and you sleep in it, right? Sure. In other words, whoever you marry, that was your choice. Now there's some ladies walking around here with some funny ideas. They want a prophetic word about their husband, you know. But the Lord told me, brother, you're supposed to marry me. That's a lie. Well, the Lord said to me in a dream last night that when I see a man coming to church today with a green tie and a red pants, that'll be the one. And then 10 guys show up in green ties and red pants.
Here it is.
See, these funny things we go through, see?
All right, that's good, Jordan.
It's a lot.
That's good. Leave it to the green tie.
Yeah. So there's seven principles. I'm only going to touch on two. There's seven principles that the Bible offers that can guide a lot of men, women too, but men into choosing the right partner. And for any of you who want to know the other five, I will put them in the comment section and also in my Instagram in about 24 hours. The first one that's the most important to me is being able to have shared faith. I want to be able to be on the same frequency as my partner, so that way we understand how to approach our problems or situation, any adversity that we may face, and know how to be able to serve one another and submit to one another. And by submit, I don't mean what the new age way of submission. I'm talking about in a way to be able to serve one another, love one another. And number two for me, what's very, very important is love and respect. Being able to have mutual love and respect are very, very, very fundamental for me, in order so that way both parties are able to feel the love, receive the love, you know, act upon the love, so we can have a fruitful relationship from today and even moving forward. And I see that you're looking at something in the Bible, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was just referencing that, what Miles Monroe was saying there. It was Genesis 2, verse 22. It says, then the rib, which the Lord God had taken from man, from Adam, he made into woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, this is now, so Adam accepted, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined with his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they're both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. You know, so we all know the story of the Bible. You know, Adam and Eve was the false first, that was the downfall of man. Mm. The creation of man and the downfall of man. Yeah, because of them not taking personal responsibility. I think if you're going to be in a relationship, you know, Sheena, I stumbled across her. The Lord presented her. He presented a lot of women. He presented a lot of women in my life in my 12 years, 14 years of being a single father. I think I may have had three girlfriends in 12 years, and none of those three lasted more than 6 months. The last girl I dated, I stumbled into in 2012, Sheena. I was like, boom, done. That's it. So basically, brother, from since the girls were born, right? Since the girls were born, three girlfriends in 12 years. And I learned how to create a quick BS factor. And when I started dating, I took her around the married men and women I'd hang with at church. Because I knew that at that point I had to be intentional, because I'm starting this whole baby daddy, baby mama routine. I'm a baby daddy and I'm creating baby mamas. It's not a routine, because in the people that pay the price the most, as much as is so infuriating on your end, the people that pay the price most in a single mom, a single parent relationship, are the children who grew up divided. It's the worst thing. And so when you're putting a position to taking responsibility of being whole, I said it once and I'll say it again. If you're not whole, if you're not taking personal responsibility for your personal development, your spiritual development, your physical development, your financial development, your moral development. There's so many things to develop. There's so many subcategories in there to develop. Your contribution, your patriotic element, so many other things. Then you're looking to it to be outsourced by somebody else versus you take it. Because if you're 50%, because what's being single? It says one, right? One is one, 100%. Because if you're 50%, and you think if you're a 50% person, are you going to attract the whole person?
100% not.
So you're going to attract a 50% person, going to attract the 50% person. And I'm not no mathematician, but I know this. 0.5 times 0.5 is 0.25. So in other words, the combination of you two multiplying is no more than a quarter of you. Because you're seeking from each other something that you're trying to complete yourself with. You know, like the movie, You Complete Me. That's not supposed to be. You're supposed to be completed.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're one and you meet one, and guess what? Boom. I've seen it time and time again in my business. In the 8-9 years I've been actively mentoring couples. I see one bull here, one bull here. Next, you know, not only does the business crumble, but their marriage and relationship crumbles. Or the wrong people get together because they got together for sex. But nothing after that. Guess what happens to their business? Nothing. They're having great sex, though, but nothing in the business.
New couple, young, early 20s, mid-20s, or just fairly new couple. Do you think leading a relationship with sex is a mistake? Do you believe that when you meet someone and you're being, trying to be intentional with somebody, they should probably hold off on that until you build a foundation?
It's
with
a natural thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but to have sex confuse the conversation.
Yeah.
Because after a marriage or relationship, sex, I would say, is about 10, 15, 12% of the actual relationship. Now, it's a very intense 12, 15% of the relationship, but it's not the relationship. And I think if sex is the reason why you guys are getting, oh, I have such hot sex with that person, and that's about it,
yeah,
and you're trying to make a relationship from sex,
yeah,
and having sex be the core of it, then, and be the center of it, you're already off on the wrong foot.
What would be two questions? Because now JoJo's growing up, you know, he's about to be in, you know, he's already a teenager,
yeah,
right? He's a
teenager.
Let's just say he goes on his first date at 18 years old. Let's just say that's what it is. He comes to you, Dad, what are two questions I should ask this woman on his first date?
It's funny. We were just talking about that the other day. I was writing down his answers. Ask if she loves God.
Yeah.
Not just like him.
Yeah.
Not because mom and dad tell you to.
Yeah.
And if she says you like God, say, ask why. Simple question.
Yeah.
Do you like God? Or do you love God? And number two, why? Tell me why. I'm just curious. And be prepared to also answer those same questions for her.
Yeah.
After she answers you, because she deserves that answer too as well.
Yeah.
Start there, because that's got your principles, your faith, your foundation, your values has got to be the core of what you do. I wish I could pack this some more, man, but it's a very intriguing topic. And it's just so interesting how Kobe Bryant brought that topic up, and right away some kid says, soft. You're soft.
Yeah.
No, that was the hardest thing that Kobe Bryant could have told him.
Yeah.
So... because how many times do you see the story?
Yeah.
Are these guys, baby mama, they can't keep up with their life after the league because they spent all the money, all this foolishness, versus the ones that stuck with one woman, right? They stuck with one decision. And by the way, guess what happened, more importantly, guess what happened to the careers?
Yeah.
They stayed focused on it.
Exactly.
They're even doubled down. Look how long Kobe Bryant played.
Yeah.
Look how long LeBron played. Because they're after legendary type status. I don't know another player that's coming into league today that's going to be wanting to pursue legendary status like they are. By the way, I'm very hot on Giannis Antetokounmpo. I like that player a lot. So nonetheless, guys, what's your thoughts, your questions, your feedback? By the way, here's a couple things we're thinking about doing. A couple things are going down here in Dallas, Texas. One quick announcement. There's Tyson and Paul.
Yeah.
What's his name? Jake Paul fight happening in Dallas, right?
Yep.
So I'm just curious. I like to go.
Yeah.
I like to take one of you guys on the 7 Fear Squad podcast list. So that, or we're thinking about doing a town hall gathering here with Alan West, who's the RNC chair. He's part of the RNC convention. And I want to see what we can do in terms of just getting some feedback, because I want to bring all parties in because it's a big election year. And maybe bring in like a David J. Harris to come and comment about entrepreneurs, because he's an entrepreneur too as well, and how economic policy is such an important thing for us to be voting for, but it is a priority into our pecking list of who to vote for.
Yeah.
So one of the two things, we're thinking about one of those two things, are you interested of going? And there's a third thing going here. Later on in the year, we want to go to a football game too as well, and I'd like to invite some of you guys to go to the AT&T Stadium here. It's a great environment, and we can't wait to see the new Bears schedule come up. But that's going to be an interesting thing about what the Bears are going to do. I know we're in Dallas. I'm living in Dallas. But if there's one thing that is stuck in Chicago with me, it's my office out there in Oak Brook, Illinois, and my love for the Chicago Bears. I do miss some deep dish pizza, though, man. I'm a Lou Malnati's guy.
I'm a Pequod's guy.
Okay.
Been to Pequod's?
Yeah. I heard about it, though.
Yeah.
That being said, guys, please drop. If you watched it all the way into the end, put the word gotcha, and we're going to be sending you out a free book here. If you put gotcha at the end, to the first five guys that do it, we'll put gotcha at the end of this in the comment section, and we'll send you a free book from my show, our show, to your address. That being said, guys, please subscribe, like, as we continue this weekly podcast here. It's about faith, family, finance, strategies that help you think like a millionaire. So therefore, one day you can be a first generation cash flow millionaire too as well. That being said, to meet again from Dallas, Texas, on behalf of Milton Alvarez, a money smart guy. Continue to live smart, continue to love smart, and be money smart today.